It's the eve of resuming the dance, the Sweet 16, and with that, it's time to get our view from the middle. Traditional start to Wednesday. He's the fine sports journalist for USA Today. Catch up with him in the red section online, usatoday.com, on Twitter, the handle at George Schroeder. George, always appreciate the time. How are you so far? Enjoying the madness.
The first weekend was as good as I can ever remember it being, Steve. So I'm enjoying it quite a bit. I assume most people are, unless you had a team that was upset. But if you're just a neutral observer of the madness this year, it's been tremendous.
Couldn't agree more. And I know we joke around, and last week I was talking about you in scenic Wichita and now in Omaha. But, you know, the actual truth is, you know, Wichita State, the Missouri Valley, that CenturyLink Center where they pack it out regularly for Creighton, 18,000. You've actually been able to visit two of the truly great basketball-loving towns in America these last 2 weeks.
Yeah, you're right, and obviously people think of Omaha, they think of, hey, that's 60 miles from Lincoln and, you know, Cornhusker football and this, that, and the other, and that's certainly true, but the Creighton Blue Jay basketball, I almost said Jayhawks.
I saw that.
A little bit of a Freudian slip, but Creighton Blue Jay basketball is a big deal in the city, and you're right about Wichita State and the Shockers. I mean, Wichita especially is probably seen as kind of an outpost. You know, it's almost a dead geographic center of the country. It's in the middle of nowhere, basically. And if you know it, you probably know it from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You may remember that John Candy and Steve Martin got stuck there. That's where they actually spent the night in the same hotel room.
That's classic.
Won't go any further than that, I don't think. But, and I've had Omaha described to me as Wichita on steroids. Let me just say this. I like both towns. And Omaha's a really nice city. It's just, it's maybe not on the beaten path for a lot of us. Obviously, Dana Altman spent a lot of time there.
Yep.
as the Creighton coach and grew up in the area. But those are both underrated basketball hotbeds. You're exactly right. And I'm excited to be in Omaha a little bit later tonight.
I want to get to the games you covered last Thursday and Saturday. You know, we've talked about Kansas a couple times this year, and it appeared maybe that stranglehold on the conference was vulnerable, but they kept it. And then they cruised past the supposed tough 16 Penn, then kind of a grinder over Seton Hall. And they had Udoka Azubuike in there. They're big. So surviving that, seeing him heal up, man, all of a sudden it looks like they've got to be feeling pretty good about their chances, no?
Well, I think so. Look, I say two things. One, Angel Delgado, the 6'11 center for Seton Hall, probably made himself a bunch of money against Kansas. I mean, he had 24 points and 23 rebounds and dominated the game, and that probably forced Kansas to play Azubuike, who's 7 foot 270, more than they wanted to as he was coming back off that sprained knee. Played 22 minutes, had foul trouble. And it was only when he was in the game that they were able to sort of neutralize the Seton Hall kid, Delgado, on both sides of the ball. There's two things I'd like to say. One, Azubuike, apparently his knee is better. It didn't, like, show signs of being really sore after playing that many minutes. You know, he hadn't played in the Big 12 tournament. He only played 3 minutes in the first-round game against Penn. He's expected to start Friday.
Whoa.
Against Clemson. So that's good news for Kansas. The second thing I would say is this, and this is a continuation of the Big 12 tournament. I think as big a development for them as Azubuike's knee returning to normal, if it is the transfer guard Malik Newman has really started playing well. In fact, I'm going to write about that tomorrow. You may recall he was a top 10 recruit from Jackson, Mississippi, went to Mississippi State and Ben Howland. It was a big score for them. And then after his freshman year, he'd been kind of consistently declared for the NBA draft and then decided to pull his name out, but didn't go back to Mississippi State, transferred to Kansas. So he sat out last year, and he's been in the starting lineup all this year. But really, we hadn't seen kind of what you expected out of him until the last four or five or six games. And all of a sudden, he is an offensive force, which makes that four-guard lineup even more potent than it has been. And I actually think that if Azubuike's healthy and Newman plays to a semblance of what he's been playing, then they're a different team they've been all year.
No question about it. And of course, hello, Newman. They'll face Clemson, who I know you didn't see, and they avoided that 5-12 trap and then went up against Auburn. And my goodness, they ran them out of San Diego. They were picked 13th in the ACC. And then they lost Dante Graham, one of their better scorers. They're pretty much going to lean on guards, I guess. So what's been the word about this Tiger team and how they might match up with Kansas?
Well, I think nobody really has a four-guard lineup like KU, but they've got three athletic guards, and they've got some big guys on the interior that can play. I mean, they're a legit team. I'm not surprised they beat Auburn. I thought Auburn's seeding was legit because they had earned that through the year, but I also thought they were running on fumes after probably overachieving for most of the year. I'm not going to say I expected a 31-point beatdown that was 41 points at one point. I don't think anybody did. But I wasn't surprised that Clemson won that game. I will be a little bit surprised if Clemson beats Kansas. I don't know that I'm ready to fast-forward Kansas into the Final Four, because you probably want to talk to the other half of the Midwest bracket. But I think they're probably going to beat Clemson. The idea that Clemson can put together two games as good as, in a row, like what they did, I think is hard. And I also think Kansas is a much different animal than Auburn.
Yeah, and I heard Bruce Pearl say Auburn had, I think they only have like 8 scholarship players. So, yeah, what you said about fumes seems accurate. What you wrote about Houston and their coach Kelvin Sampson, who almost got bounced in the opener and then got buzzer beaten by Michigan. You know, with this guy, he's kind of an enigma. A lot of people some wonder why he's still coaching in college. Of course, then the Cougars hadn't won a tournament game since Phi Slamma Jamma. So that just, George, seems like an interesting match. A coach seeking redemption and a program that really hadn't been relevant since Clyde Drexler and Hakeem Olajuwon.
Well, yeah, I mean, a decade ago, Kelvin Sampson got Oklahoma on probation and then went and did the exact same stuff at Indiana. He landed in a better job. He'd always been one of those guys that chafed at being at a football school and being in the shadow of Oklahoma football. So he gets to Indiana, which is like the exact reversal.
Right.
And does the same thing. And it was too many phone calls to recruits for the NCAA rules at the time. And so he got, let go by Indiana, too. And he got a 5-year show cause from the NCAA for that second set of offenses. Now, given sort of the allegations that we're hearing in the current basketball scandal, it's not like the stuff that he got popped for feels very big. But it was NCAA rule-breaking, and I think a lot of people thought he was going to be out of the game forever. Instead, he went to the NBA, and I think he actually thought he was going to be an NBA head coach at some point, interviewed for a couple jobs. Once the 5-year show cause expired, though, he was an assistant coach with the Rockets, and the University of Houston needed a coach and called him, and the next thing you know, there he is. Is he tarnished because of the NCAA issues? Absolutely. Again, are those the same kinds of sort of rule-breaking that we sort of look at and we go, wow, that's terrible stuff? Maybe not. But here's what has never been in dispute about Kelvin Sampson. The guy can flat coach. I mean, he built the program at Oklahoma. And he had Indiana, by the way, playing as well as they've played since Bobby Knight and since then, frankly.
Yep.
When he got, I think they were 22-4 when he left. So just the guy can coach. He can build programs. He's probably, even though he loved, I think, being at Indiana and being at sort of one of those creme de la creme jobs, he's probably more built to be the guy who builds in a more obscure location. And for that, I think Houston fits him.
Talking big dance with George Schroeder, USA Today. So you were there for the Jordan Poole buzzer beater that sent Houston packing and Michigan to the Sweet 16. But I'll tell you what, that game, emotions-wise, the Cougars have a senior, Devin Davis, misses both foul shots with 4 seconds left. Poole hits the winner. I mean, I know you've seen a lot of great football and basketball. Can you get a more thrill of victory, agony of defeat contrast than that?
Probably not. I mean, if he hits both foul shots, they win the game.
Yep.
If he hits one, then all they do is tie, right?
So, yep.
But it was I guess that's actually not right, but whatever. He missed both foul shots, and so the next thing you know, they lose the game, and he's face down on the court. And what's interesting is, and I didn't know this at the time because I was working, but about a half hour, 45 minutes after the game, he went back out, stood on that same free throw line, that same basket, and just stood there for 4 or 5 minutes. And it was captured by another media member. I saw a tweet about it with some photos. And you gotta realize, you know, it's the end. And you realize that the road ended because you missed the foul shot.
Yep.
So on the one hand, you've got that. And on the other hand, you've got Michigan, which still has to hit a shot. And gets an improbable shot from a freshman who's a very good player, but, you know, he's only played a few minutes that night. He only had 10 points in the previous several games. And, you know, he's probably not the first or second option. And then he hits a 28-footer to win it. That's what March Madness is made of. Unfortunately, it's made of that on both ends, the celebration on one end and the crying, I guess, for lack of a better word, on the other. That's what makes this tournament, especially the early rounds, so riveting and compelling, I think, for us, is because it's both ends of that, quite frankly. We don't like to talk about the sad end, but the deathly quiet locker room is just as much a part of this as the locker room where they're, you know, spraying water all over the place and screaming and dancing, and coaches are taking their shirts off and all those other goofy things.
You know, I know it's Michigan, about as prominent a program as you get in college athletics, but, you know, they won the Big Ten tournament back-to-back years. John Beilein has been to the national title game. They've got an experienced starting five, and ironically, the only freshman who plays is Poole, and I know I was guilty of it. Make any sense to say the Wolverines kind of snuck up on some people in this tournament?
I guess it makes a little sense. I mean, in part because, let's be honest, the Big Ten was not very good this year. You see that in the fact that there's only two Big Ten teams in the Sweet 16, them and Purdue. And so you didn't really know what to think, even when Michigan won the Big Ten tournament. Then you add the second part, and they played the Big Ten tournament sometime in early December, it seems like. It was so long ago. And so that, you're sort of out of sight, out of mind. They weren't playing on championship weekend, and you just weren't thinking about them as much. You know what? It's a pretty good team. I don't know if they're great, but it's a pretty good team. I would not be surprised to see them continue to advance in the West region. They've got nice guards. They've kind of got a good mix of young guys and older guys. I was really impressed watching them. That said, they want the better team against Houston. They just hit the shot at the end. They'll need to play better than that if they want to advance.
Sure. I know you didn't see the game firsthand, but I saw you tweet about it. That Michigan State-Syracuse game, the orange, that 2-3 zone held the Spartans to no field goals. The final, 5:45? Syracuse made a whole two. Is that just the ugliest offense we'll see, or just a couple of physical defenses and rebounders just getting the upper hand? Because that wasn't very attractive basketball.
Well, look, there was some defense being played, but let's be honest, it was mostly the ugly offense, your first option. It's a lot like this. It's a lot like if you and I, and we picked eight listeners, and we went out to a playground, right? And none of us can really play basketball, probably, to start with, okay? We don't bring any ringers in there. And then, instead of a basketball, we used like an 8-pound rock to try to dribble and shoot and score. That's what the whole game felt like. But certainly for Michigan State down the stretch, it's like they had no clue how to play a zone. But it's not a secret that Syracuse plays a 2-3 zone. I mean, they don't do anything else, and they haven't under Jim Boeheim, essentially. But knowing what they do and practicing against it, and then not, you know, finding the right shots and not getting frustrated and taking bad shots, those are two different things. And when they kept missing shots, I mean, it was like they got so discombobulated. Look, they actually did the right thing several times down the stretch. They got the ball to a guy, you know, just inside the free throw line in sort of the soft underbelly of the zone, and he didn't even square up and look at the basket. And I had somebody on Twitter tell me, well, that's because he's not a very good option there. Well, I'm like, well, why is he in that position? Put somebody else, have somebody else flash at that spot in the zone. It's like they forgot how to play, and it was a terrible display of basketball, and that's not to take anything away from Syracuse, which, you know, was barely in the tournament, and then as an 11 seed had to play in game, then won two games after that. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you're talking about that was the Winston kid, I think, who just would get the ball inside and then turn around and be like, nope, I don't want to shoot. But anyway, final thought for George Schroeder. So I had Duke beating Carolina in the finals. Obviously, the heels are out. The Dukies crushed. They're as talented as anybody. Start four freshmen in Grayson Allen. I remember 2 years ago, people were angry Syracuse got in, and then they made the Final Four. What do you make of this matchup between the Cuse and Duke and Boeheim and Coach K? Pretty interesting.
Well, the interesting thing is that, you know, as much as I just talked about that Syracuse zone, which really is an effective zone, it's what Duke's using now. I mean, that's one of the underplayed, and I suspect it won't be underplayed this time tomorrow or by Friday. One of the underplayed parts of their season is they didn't play any good defense. They were playing man-to-man, and they were terrible. Until Coach K decided to go to the zone, and they're playing a zone very similar to what Jim Boeheim runs at Syracuse, and it's helped change it. They're 9-2 since they really went to the, they played the zone something like 82% of the time, if you believe all those, you know, advanced analytics type of things. And it's changed the game for them. And that said, playing that zone, they beat Syracuse 60-44 in a game that sounds a lot like the game that, I didn't see it, but it sounds a lot like the game we were just talking about. When I look at those two teams, though, one of them's a whole lot better than the other one. And if they're both going to play the same kind of zone, I'm going to go with the Blue Devils because they're a lot more talented.
All righty. Folks, he's got the Friday-Sunday games in Omaha, Kansas-Clemson, the Orange and the Blue Devils. See who gets the pack for San Antonio. Follow his work in USA Today on Twitter, at George Schroeder. Fun stuff as always, George. Travel safe, and we'll catch up next week.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
All right. Take it easy.